Today's episode of the Can Be Now podcast is brought to you by Gustafson Insurance, business, home, and auto insurance made simple. For a free quote, call 503-266-2216.
How much bikes are there?
I'd say there's 100% of bikes in out there.
There was just like dead radio silence for like 3 seconds. That's how my jokes usually go.
Prison was probably the best experience I've ever had in my life.
Hope you didn't get in a car wreck from that hilarious story that Frankie told.
It is like Comedy Central around here tonight.
He's got like one line. I'm in so much pain.
Welcome to the Can Be Now podcast.
We are the best and easiest way to stay connected to what's happening in your hometown. I'm Tyler Franke.
And I'm Tyler Clausen.
They say if it weren't for deadlines, nothing would ever get done. July 5th was the last day applications would be accepted for those interested in taking Tracy Height's seat on the Canby City Council, and that deadline brought forth three new candidates, joining the four others who had already thrown their hats into the ring. The seven applicants will be interviewed during a special session on Wednesday, July 24th at 7 p.m. The successful appointee will be decided by a vote of the remaining council members. Here's a look at the three newest applicants. Trygve Berge is Vice President of Inline Commercial Construction, a large Alloa-based general contracting firm operating throughout Oregon and Southwest Washington. His previous civic experience includes membership on a public policy committee in Hillsborough, as well as an investment roundtable for the Hillsborough Chamber of Commerce. His major interests in the city of Canby include strategic planning, youth activities, community outreach, and helping Canby grow in a positive direction. I have been a member of this community for 12 years and would like to get more involved with the long-term planning, he says. I would also like to help with the direction Canby is moving in as a city. He's a coach of the Canby High School trap shooting team and has taught Taekwondo for 23 years. Kathy Ray Smith is an artist, designer, and the founding president of Canby Area Beautification, a new nonprofit dedicated to making our town true to its nickname, the Garden Spot. If you're unfamiliar with her work, she's the genius behind the Magic of Discovery mural that prominently adorns one wall of the Canby Public Library on Northeast 2nd. Her interests include the beautification of Canby, obviously, agricultural tourism development, and nurturing a vibrant and vital creative community. She wants to, quote, lend whatever experience and expertise to the enrichment of our community that I can, she says. She holds a Master of Arts from the Corcoran School of the Arts and Design in Washington, D.C., and a Bachelor of Arts from Merrillhurst. Kevin Sterrett is an author, activist, and founder of the Oregon Firearms Federation, or OFF, which bills itself as a no-compromise gun rights organization. It has a long history of Second Amendment-related advocacy in the Oregon legislature over the past 20 years. The answers on his city council application were the briefest of the seven. Asked what are your major interests or concerns in the city programs, he said the agenda of some city council members. Under reason for your interest in this position, he listed simply protection of family values. He did not elaborate further, but he may have been referring, at least in part, to the controversy earlier this year over a proposed local proclamation recognizing Transgender Day of Visibility. Kevin Sterrett was among those who spoke on the issue at the April 3rd Canby City Council meeting, in which he discussed the need to protect the rights of non-transgender children, particularly in school locker rooms and public bathrooms.
What if a 50-year-old man identifies as a 14-year-old boy who identifies as a 12-year-old girl? Are the children who are not transsexual, do they have any protections? Do they have protections in bathrooms? Do they have protections in locker rooms? Do they have protections in showers? Do they have the protections at the Canby pool? This is not about tolerance, all right? If a 50-year-old man can shower with your 12-year-old daughter, that is not tolerance, that is child abuse. And that is something we seriously need to address.
The four applicants who had previously applied to be considered for Tracy Height's seat were Andrew Hale, Rachel Swanson, Jason Padden, and Brian M. Deek. For bios on those four candidates, see our website, canbynowpod.com. The new councilor will be sworn in on August 7th and will serve until just after the 2020 general election, at which time they or a different candidate would be elected for the remaining 2 years of the term.
Clackamas County Water Environment Services, WES, is awarding $300,000 in grants through the River Health Stewardship Program to 14 organizations for the protection of local watersheds. The grant will support a variety of activities that restore habitat, manage invasive plant species, organize community volunteer events, provide watershed science education, and remove trash from waterways while enhancing the water quality. The grants will also support the continuation of previous projects to protect investments made in recent years. The organizations that will be receiving grant funds include Dave's Killer Bread, the Clackamas River Basin Council, the Clackamas River Community Cooperative, Clackamas High School, North Clackamas Watershed Council, Northwest Center for Alternatives to Pesticides, and Friends of Trees. For a complete list of organizations and their projects, visit our website at campingoutpod.com. The City of Canby invites the public to come and meet the finalists to replace retiring City Administrator Rick Robinson tonight. The meet and greet will take place from 6 to 8 p.m. at the Community Room of the Canby Police Department on Northwest 3rd Avenue. The event is the next step in the City's months-long search for a replacement for Robinson, who retires at the end of October after 5 years as the City's Chief Executive. Canby received 54 applications for the job after a nationwide posting and recruitment conducted by its executive search firm, Peckman & McKinney. The applicants were vetted and narrowed down to a list of finalists who spent the day in interviews before the City Council yesterday, July 10th. Though your average Cambyite might not be overly familiar with the City Administrator or what they do, it's really an extremely important job. Or at least that's what Frankie tells me. Though the mayor and city council are the elected officials who enact ordinances, make policy decisions, and set overall agendas for the city, it's the city administrator who really runs things day to day. Functioning much like a CEO of a corporation, the city administrator is charged with bringing the city council's vision to life, while also doing or overseeing the background work and making recommendations on most of the decisions that come before them. They also handle the personnel. The city administrator is one of only three jobs that have been appointed by or report directly to the council, the other two being the city judge and city attorney. The city administrator heads up all hiring, firing, promotions, and disciplinary action that may otherwise be required for people who work for the city of Canby. The city charter actually prohibits councilors from giving orders or direction to employees. It all has to go through the administrator. This is particularly critical as the city is facing a number of retirements and other vacancies in critical departments in the coming year. The new city administrator will be largely in charge of filling these positions and could therefore play a large role in helping shape the composition of the city's police, planning, and other vital departments for years to come. A Portland man was sentenced this week to 86 months in federal prison and 3 years supervised release for using the dark net to sell ecstasy to customers across the U.S. In June 2017, Skylar Dalen Ford, a very fun name to say out loud, 24 years old, was on post-prison supervision after a previous conviction for possession of Schedule II controlled substance when a Multnomah County probation officer found more than 100 grams of heroin in his home during a routine visit. During a subsequent search of his residence, federal agents located an unopened parcel addressed to Ford and his dog Orbit, also a fun name to say out loud. The package was opened and found to contain nearly 500 grams of MDMA. I don't know why that was hard for me to say, also known as ecstasy or Molly. Ford admitted to purchasing the ecstasy from a vendor in the Netherlands and reselling on Alphabay, a darknet marketplace. Investigators were later able to confirm that Ford had been an Alphabay vendor since November 2016 and had completed more than 500 confirmed sales of ecstasy. On January 9th, 2019, Ford pleaded guilty to one count of possession with intent to distribute MDMA, a Schedule I controlled substance. As part of his plea agreement, Ford agreed to forfeit any property used to facilitate his crimes as identified by the government. On Sunday, a frantic post by a local resident caught the attention of many of the active members on the community Facebook group Cambie Now. Never heard of it. A woman had accidentally sold at a garage sale a CD binder that also contained her husband's beloved movie collection. Before the internet, such a collection would have probably been lost forever. But times have changed. The sleuths at Cambie Now were able to quickly identify the man who had bought the collection, Dan Walker, another local resident who was more than happy to see the movie collection returned. We had the opportunity to talk to Dan this week, and he told us all about his experience and how it warmed his heart. Here comes On the Line with Frankie and Dan Walker.
Well, I was just on my way to Costco Sunday. Mm-hmm. I needed to pick up some garlic, and I need to go to Freddy's to get some mustard seed for canning pickles. So headed through Barlow on my way into Wilsonville, I saw the yard sale sign, and, you know, I was looking for a deal, decided to follow the sign.
Sure. It was a nice day. You're just like, why not?
Yeah. It was perfect. It was early morning.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, browsing the sale, I found a 3-ring binder sized CD folder that had a sign on a little 3x5 card that said the CDs were $1 a piece. Mm-hmm. And it said no movies. It just said, I think it said music CDs. Anyway, I was thumbing through it, and a lot of it was older country music, like greatest hits of Glenn Campbell and Johnny Cash. And, you know, I was starting to pull a few of them out, and I thought, you know, I kind of want all of these. Mm-hmm. So I asked the lady, you know, how much for all of them? She said, well, make an offer. You know, so I said $15, and she said, how about 20? And I said, that's fair. And I bought about another $10 worth of miscellaneous stuff at the sale. And I zipped up the book, and she actually helped me carry it out to my car. Had a couple handfuls of goodies.
Uh-huh.
And then I left and, you know, made my errands and came home and spent the rest of the day making a batch of pickles. Well, that evening, after I'd had dinner with a friend of mine, I, you know, went on the internet for the first time, and I got a friend request from Elisa Knave, and I'd never heard of her before. So, you know, usually before I accept a friend request, I go snoop around their Facebook page to see who they are, and I see, well, she's from Cambie, and I thought, well, maybe she's trying to get onto my Mark Road Farm Facebook page.
Okay.
I had set that up for selling eggs for my chickens.
Cool.
And anyway, I accepted her friend request, and instantly she wrote back and said, hey, are you the guy that came to my yard sale today and bought some CDs? So I wrote back to her and said, well, yeah, that was me. And she said, well, I accidentally sold you too many. I wasn't supposed to sell the rest of the book, which had a lot of her husband's favorite movie or DVDs in it.
Mm-hmm.
And there were some nice movies in there. You know, a lot of war movies and, you know, some comedies. And, you know, I thought, man, this is great.
Yeah, yeah. So you had noticed once you gotten home and everything, you kind of noticed, oh, there's some cool movies in here along with the music that you had originally intended to buy.
Right, right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And anyway, she wrote back and, you know, said, I made a horrible mistake. I wasn't supposed to sell the book or the movies.
Mm-hmm.
She said, you know, if I can come and pick those up and you keep your music, I'll give you a $50 reward.
Mm.
So I wrote back and I said, well, no, it sounds like an honest mistake. I don't want your money. You can come on by this evening if you like, or tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, probably within about half an hour, she was at my door. She came in and we looked through the book, and I had already picked out the music CDs, and I had them sitting there on the table. And I said, here, I picked out the music, and if you want to thumb through this and make sure everything is what you're after. She didn't even look through it. She tried to give me some money, and I said, no, you know, donate it to somebody if you really want to.
Mm-hmm.
Do something with that $50. I don't need it. You know, mm-hmm. It was just an honest mistake.
Yeah.
So she gave me a big old hug and almost looked like she wanted to cry. And she grabbed the book and took off. So, and then just after she left, I went online and I looked up the on Canby Now, her posting that she'd posted like a few hours earlier that day, looking for me.
Mm-hmm.
So I was starting to read through it. And that's when I put a posting up. I said, hey, I'm the guy. She found me. And a few minutes later, I posted that she had just picked up the book and or the folder with the CDs and was headed home. So then it seemed to kind of snowball the posting on Canby Now.
Yeah, it did. Kind of blew up.
Last time I looked, there was like, I don't know, 200 and some likes on, I don't know, one of the postings I'd put up there. Like, I think I'd given her the books back, and just nothing but a lot of positive comments from people.
Mm-hmm.
Most of them, I don't know any of them other than, you know, their screen names from Canby Now. So it was kind of fun.
Yeah, cool. And it sounds like, I mean, you just, as soon as you found out, like, that it was a mistake and that these were something that was, you know, important to her husband, you were like, you know, totally no problem. Like, it just, you know, never seemed to be an issue for you.
No, it wasn't. You know, I've made mistakes in life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I could have easily been a jerk about it and said, oh, well, I'm keeping them. I've bought them.
Right.
You know,
but that's finders not, keepers. That's yeah.
I mean, that's not me. And, you know, it's no big deal.
Yeah.
You know, I was glad to get them back to her. Going back and reading her postings, it looked like it was pretty important to her to get those DVDs back.
Yeah.
And, you know, just a mistake.
Yeah.
No big deal.
Yeah.
I'm not out anything.
Yeah, for sure. And I, you know, when you do something like you know, make a mistake like that, that's, you know, hurts either your spouse or somebody that you care about. And just that sickening feeling that you get in your stomach, I'm sure she was feeling that. And, you know, for you to see the impact that it had on her and all the positive response from the people following the story on Canby Now, that must have made it just really rewarding for you, I would guess.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It warms your heart to see all these strangers post, you know, nice, kind words about me that, you know, they've never met me. We've probably crossed paths in local businesses, but
yeah,
it was nice, you know.
So I'm here with Derek Hill, president of Advantage Mortgage in Canby. I was wondering what's going on in the mortgage industry right now.
The mortgage industry is on fire right now. The big thing that's really exciting for us is that we are now an independent mortgage broker, which means that we can offer substantially lower rates and lower fees for our customers. For example, we just got a loan last week and the realtor said, hey, I think you should go talk to Derek at Advantage Mortgage. And sure enough, we got the borrower 3/4 better rate, and we saved him $14,000 in fees.
Cool. So where can people find you?
So office number is 503-266-5800, or they can find us on the web at findtheadvantage.com. But most people just give us a holler or they stop in.
Yeah. Cool. Thanks, Derek.
Yeah, you bet. Advantage Mortgage, NMLS number 1770599. Derek Hill's NMLS number 50183. Equal housing opportunity.
True story. When we first started the Canby Now podcast, we were looking to buy some stickers, just something to help us get our name out there. We didn't have a lot of money, so we tried to do everything as cheaply as possible online. We wound up with 1,000 of these teeny tiny cheap looking stickers. Not exactly the impressive swag we were hoping for, but you know, you get what you pay for.
Yes, you do. If we had been smart, we would have gone to see Carrie at Promotional Strategies. She's a real live human and a creative genius who will deliver practical, strategic ways to promote your business on any budget. If you're looking for high quality swag that you can be proud to see your logo on, Promotional Strategies is where you want to go. Find them at 695 Southeast 1st Avenue in Canby or online at ps266swag.com. So my guest on the Canby Conversation today is someone who grew up and went to high school here in Canby, graduated
right.
from Oregon State University in 2012. But since then, you've been doing music all over the country, all over the world. It's Brian Smith, you guys may know him as, but he goes by the stage name B. Appleseed.
It's true.
Welcome to the Cambi Now podcast, Brian. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
You're based out of Los Angeles now, but you're just back in Cambi for this week, and you hit us up, and we're able to make it work on short notice. And,
I'm happy to be here. It's really great.
Yeah, awesome. So tell us a little bit about your music.
Well, I've been doing it since I was like 14. I started out in Cambi. I made a lot of records in high school that weren't very good.
Okay.
So people may remember me as great skateboarder, terrible musician.
Okay.
But since then, you know, I went to college. When I went to college, I kind of stopped skating a bit and got more concentrated on the music and the things. And then college, I did a study abroad at the end of my school at Oregon State University. And that was I went to Vienna, Austria.
Okay.
And then I was in Europe on a one-way ticket. I was like, you're done with school?
Yeah.
I'm like, and so I was like, I always wanted to travel around. I always wanted to, you know, do some international tour.
When you are over there and you see the mountains in Austria, does it just make you burst out in song? Because I saw a movie like that one time. Yeah,
dude, Western Austria, phenomenal.
Yeah,
it's really heaven.
Are the hills alive with the sound of music?
They totally are. And like to take a train, I think like Switzerland, like if you go like Zurich to like Vienna, that's like one of the most beautiful train rides. If you only have to choose one like picturesque landscape to look at in Europe, it's one of the nicer ones.
Yeah. So growing up in high school, great skater, not good at music. So you're still better than me because I'm bad at both of those things.
Okay.
But so you wound up in Europe, kind of background and performances and stuff.
Or? Yeah, I went to school for business. My intention with that degree was like, all right, well, I'm good at this organizing thing. I had to change a major in school, so I looked around, what am I doing?
Yeah.
And I was doing, like, organizing concerts. I was the president of the Musicians Guild at Oregon State University for 2 years.
Cool.
I organized, like, 60 or 70 shows for touring bands and ran this festival for 4 years there every summer. And so it was just like, well, I'm just doing music stuff. And so, I mean, it seemed like, what could I do where I could continue doing this? And that was, like, business management. It seemed like the right choice. Like, I'm organizing a lot of things.
And then do music on the side?
Yeah, that's what I originally thought it would be. And then fast forward to when I finished the degree in Vienna, Austria, I just thought, you know, I'll get a rail pass, travel around for 3 months, enjoy it, you know.
Yeah.
Legally, I'm allowed to stay like 90 days. So
okay.
After my student visa ended. So I
kick
just.
Kick you out.
Yeah. And so I just thought, I'm going to try that out. And I ended up, like, after 3 weeks of that 3 months, I ended up making a profit. And I was like, well, I thought I was going to find a job over here or maybe, like, finish this and go back and find a job.
What were you doing? You were doing performances?
But I was playing concerts I organized. So after that, I was like, well, I guess I found a job. And then, you know, eventually the 90 days expired, and I was like, well, what's Eastern Europe like? And maybe I'll hang out there for 90 days. And then it was like, well, I'll go back in for 90 more days. I'll do this again. It's why not?
Yeah.
I only do this once. You know, I have no other responsibilities in life at this point.
Sounds kind of awesome.
So I ended up doing that for 3 years around Europe. I went to South America. I toured around the States. I was all over the place. And then I ended up coming back to Portland. Lived in Portland back to Cambi when we moved to Portland, you know. To be in the city for the first time. Lived there a couple of years. Then, like 2.5 years ago, I moved to Los Angeles. So I've been there ever since.
Do you have any like cool or crazy stories from overseas from that period where you're just kind of traveling around and playing music?
Infinite. Yeah. I wrote a book, actually. I haven't, like, it's like done. I'm done. It's like 350 pages or some crazy things.
Yeah.
So you're like, you don't want to look at it anymore.
Okay.
But also, I'm like, if you want to be taken seriously as a writer, as I know from my business school, you don't release things in your 20s. Like, the older, that's a weird feel that like
voice.
The older you get, the more you're taken seriously.
Yeah, for sure.
And so I'm like, I'm just going to put these things on the shelf for now.
Yeah.
I'm 29 now.
Yeah.
So I'm like, I might take them off in the next couple of years. I'm just waiting until the moment's right.
You can't tell me one story, though?
One story? Okay, sorry, I sidetracked it.
Yeah.
Well, Dang, I went to so many places. I would say the most beautiful place I went to was the Plitvice Lakes in Croatia.
What's it called?
Plitvice Lakes. It's like some crazy thing, like Plitvicica,
right,
Jezera.
Like 16 consonants
some crazy,
in a row.
Yeah, it's like, and they all have squiggles above them.
Right.
But you don't know what so you're like, yeah. Well, you know, any place that has like a population under like 5 million, they generally like speak English. So you're lucky there.
Yeah.
But what it is it's a series of cascading lakes that are like all teal blue, and it's like all very beautiful nature. And all around, and they have waterfalls going from one to the next, and they built these wooden structures that you walk on, and it's really like if you go to any city in Croatia, but most people go to the capital, Zagreb, where I also lived for a month at one point. But if you go there, it's really easy to get there. It's really cheap. You just take a bus. It's direct. Yeah. You're in like heaven on earth.
Yeah,
it's really magical. It's just like lush forests. All these.
Sounds really beautiful. I'd love to Google it, but I don't know how to spell it. So
yeah, I'll write it down for you.
Okay, that'd be great.
Plitvice Lakes.
Yeah. So what's your life like now down in LA?
I have a very strange life down in Los Angeles.
Well, I mean, just
these days
being in Los Angeles by itself, doing anything would be a little strange.
It is,
especially coming from Camby.
It's pretty surreal. I mean, like, I grew up here and all the palm tree stuff, like we know from television,
yeah.
Or like anywhere else in the world, you're like, oh, LA.
It's
like
a couple
everything
palm
is perfect. It's this mirage,
right?
Like magic, whatever. You have these images that
you
sold
the
from Hollywood.
Sign,
yeah, I can see it from my roof, which is nice.
Cool.
Yeah. Very nice. Yes. But it's this big hustle and bustle, you know. Mm. But fortunately, in some kind of weird way, you know, as bad as it is that there's so many cars in Los Angeles. The city was built for cars, so it's really spread out. Mm. And so every neighborhood is like, it doesn't feel like you're in a city, you know?
Yeah.
It feels kind of like, all right, there's some cars going by, whatever. Like, but
That's
it
cool.
feels like a bunch of side streets, and then there's some like really busy boulevards that go around.
Yeah, yeah. And the weather's got to be great, right? Like,
it's great.
You know,
that was like, I mean, there was a variety of reasons that attracted me there.
Yeah.
But I moved there in the winter.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It definitely has that appeal to
it. It's like 60 degrees.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, like, it does get cold on some nights, but it's nowhere near like here. It's not like some kind of like snow, like snow-nado or whatever it is.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's snowpocalypse.
Snowpocalypse.
What we call it out here.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So you've been doing the music thing for a while now, about 7 or 8 years. What keeps you going with your music? What's it about to you?
It's really not even like a choice. It's not like, at this point it's like just who I am, you know, it's no, like, denying that this is always going to be the thing I'm most passionate about. Like, at this point, music has taken me to almost 50 countries. I've played in like, I think it's like 42 or 43 or something. And
I couldn't even name 50 countries, so that's pretty
cool. I don't know. It's like, it's surreal that I have, maybe it's not like the most financially rewarding path in life, but my value system is I base my wealth on like experience,
you know.
And like gathering information and just learning about this place that we live on, you know. It's like a crazy world that we live in, and there's so much.
And, you know, was it just having the courage to put yourself out there that made that? Because I, you know, there may be people or kids listening to this that, you know, dream of being a musician or, you know, kind of the path to that isn't always clear.
It's never clear. I don't know. It's really a big, you make a lot of sacrifices for it. You know? I decided this is like my only way, but that's resulted in like me living out of my car for long periods of time or like whatever, you know? I would like finding weird ways to like manage to survive. But now I'm at this very beautiful place in my life, like after seeing through that storm and whatnot, like I struggled a lot, and now I live in like a beautiful place, and LA that I'm very happy with, and I'm happy with my life there. And I work for, I mean, I do have another job there too, but it's very bizarre. It's basically, I work for this dental consulting company, mm-hmm. and they find patients for dental exams across the country for anybody getting their license to practice, either after they finish school or they're moving from another country or another state or something, and they might not know a patient locally, because you have to have a patient that you can do your exam on, you know? Mm-hmm. But it has to be like very specific criteria. So anyway, I am involved with like helping them coordinate their travel. And I've been doing this last like 4 months.
Yeah.
And it's taken me to like all over the country.
Yeah.
Very last minute. But coming up here, that was like my 20th flight since early February. Mm. Yeah. So I was like,
It's fun, like learning things. Like, I never knew that was a job, or, you know.
I never knew either. And it just was a various steps of like being introduced to this person and then that person. And then you end up in some like weird reality you never thought you'd be in.
Well, it's been really fun to talk to you and hear some of your story, but I know you've got kind of a tight time frame where we're going
here.
Sure,
it's true. I am playing a show.
Yeah, tonight. I'd love to hear you play a couple of your songs.
Yeah, I'd love to play it for you.
Tell you cool, see the universe wherever you are. Are you still casting spells? To be in the stars, just smoking dirty cigarettes like we used to do. Just passing the time for a moment or two. Well, I still think of you often. Don't speak for too much, I may be out of reach. I'm not out of touch. Well, if you find yourself some money to afford you some plans, oh, maybe I'll see you in Port. Oh, maybe I'll see you in Port. And though we never were lovers, we never needed to be. Our friendship now and then, an infinitely free. And I hope you're doing well, please write when you can. And maybe I'll see you in Port. Maybe I see you in Portland. Maybe I see you in Portland. From Bally Lipton, maybe I see you in Portland. From Bally Lipton, maybe I see you in Portland. From Bally Lipton, maybe I see you in Portland. Yeah. You're one of the kindest souls I ever did meet when I invited you up to step in from the street. But when the backpack of blue starts settling in, oh, maybe I see you in Portland. Oh, maybe I see you in Portland. And Hitchin Island was a pilgrimage, we knew it at the time, searching the soul of your late grandfather for yours and for mine. Well, if you find yourself still searching, the grass is green where I live. So maybe I see you in Portland. Oh, maybe I see you in Portland. Hey, maybe I see you in Portland. From Bally Lipton, maybe I see you in Portland. From Bally Lipton, maybe I see you in Portland. From Bally Lipton, maybe I see you in Portland. Yeah, we're serious about what's a Peace Corps. We're gonna bear it. So beautiful to know where that much of a home. And homes are tough keeping, so I'm blessed as it's in. And so maybe I see you in Portland. Oh, maybe I see you in Portland. But wherever we're living the same at home in a heartbeat when we walk through the rain. Well, I've gotten better at dancing. I've started a band, it's called Maybe I See You in Portland. Oh, maybe I see you in Portland. Oh, yeah. Maybe I see you in Portland. Boom, body, do, do. Maybe I see you in Portland. Boom, body, do, do. Maybe I see you in Portland. Boom, body, do, do. Maybe I see you in Portland. Yeah. Maybe I see you in Portland. Hey, bum 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 bada doo 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 doo.
Nice, I really like that one. You should do a Canby version. Maybe I'll see you in Canby.
Maybe I'll see you in Canby, Oregon. I actually did write a song that says Canby, Oregon.
Oh, really?
In it.
You gonna do that one?
It's one of the new demos.
You can't release it. Okay.
I don't know. Mm. Like,
fair enough.
I forgot the words on that one.
Yeah.
There's a lot of words, but I forgot.
Okay.
Visions to the edge of the earth and fire. but I'm feeling too singing.
Appleseed. You can find out more about him at bappleseed.tumblr.com and get a sneak peek at his new album at tinyurl.com/bappleseed. Thanks a lot, man.
Thank you so much.
Hey, Tyler, did you know that the world has changed in the past 20 years?
No way!
Yep, it's true. The way people shop for goods and services has completely changed since this thing called the internet started catching on.
Yeah, I've heard of it.
And yet some realtors still offer the same old services in the same old ways and for the same old percentages. Victory Point Property Group in Canby believes it's time the real estate business caught up with the times. They'll meet with you for free, explain every step of the process, give you a clear game plan, and even let you choose the listing commission.
Really? They let you choose their commission?
Really? Victory Point Property Group understands this is one of the biggest and most exciting decisions of your life, and they'll do everything they can to make sure you handle it like a rock star.
Wow, that sounds great. I'm going to check them out by calling 503-263-4700 or by visiting online at victorypointhomes.com.
You do that. Victory Point Property Group, real estate reimagined.
More than 1.2 million Americans receive internet, TV, and telephone services from community cooperatives like Direct Link. They believe that their role revolves around partnerships, whether sponsoring a local event, hosting educational classes, or investing in fiber internet technology. Direct Link is here for our community because they are a part of our community.
Beyond just working in Canby, most of DirectLink's employees live here as well. DirectLink's investment in the local area reaches past business interests and extends into the everyday lives of neighbors, friends, and families. Visit them online at directlink.coop to learn more about their communication services and community activities. Canby Then is brought to you by Retro Revival. They are not your average antique shop. Open daily. Find them on the corner of Northwest 3rd and Grant in downtown Canby. Originally from a New Era farm just outside of Canby, Old Bill Brown survived the decade-long sheepshooters war that decimated the livelihood of many smaller producers, and even thrived. By the early 20th century, he had amassed an empire consisting of more than 36,000 acres he owned outright, with an additional 100,000 acres he controlled through water rights. His prized herds of wild horses numbered as many as 10,000, only a rough estimate because Bill kept no records. And he kept upwards of 30,000 sheep and other animals that formed a lucrative wool business. Bill was an odd character, especially for the Wild West. He never drank. He never swore. He never lied. He hated tobacco. He often rode shirtless like a centaur and in socks. But though he owned thousands of horses, he preferred to walk most of the time. It was said that he thought nothing of a 30-mile hike after supper, and he regularly trekked the 20 miles that separated his two main ranches. He was quote, one of the world's worst bookkeepers, according to one newspaper report. Most of his numbers on employees, stock, and inventory were kept nowhere but in his own head. He often wrote and signed checks, in pencil no less, on anything he might have handy. Butcher paper, wrapping paper, tin cans, labels, scraps of newspaper, even bark chips. Bill was so well known for this habit that any bank in Central or Eastern Oregon would honor these crude IOUs, even for amounts as high as $10,000, an enormous fortune in those days. He once spent $6,000 on hogs because he thought bacon and ham shouldn't cost as much as it did on the range. His ranch hands quickly decided that they didn't care for herding pigs, so Bill and an employee butchered the lot all at once. Since they had no idea how to properly package meat, the entire stock spoiled. But he could spare such eccentricities. His annual income in those days, as near as anyone could tell, was $140,000, a sum that would be worth several million today. With his lands, animals, and other operations, we roughly estimate his net worth at somewhere in the neighborhood of $40 million of today's dollars. In 1914, he built a fine new home on his main headquarters at the Buck Creek Ranch. It had 8 bedrooms, an office, indoor plumbing, and a dining room table that set 12. It was known as one of the most finely furnished homes in the western half of the country. It was a home built for the wife and family that he sadly would never have. Old Bill was also widely known for his generosity and philanthropy. Paid his employees well, and they were fiercely loyal to him. A former school teacher in California, where he had earned $40 a month, he was a staunch supporter of education, and he gave generous gifts, never less than $5,000, to the College of Puget Sound, seminaries in Pendleton and San Francisco, and several other educational institutions. He gave $30,000 to Willamette University, and when his niece was accepted to the University of Oregon, he wrote U of O a check for $25,000, probably on the back of a football program. A devout Methodist, he would give money to any church that asked. Well, almost any church. One story tells of a Methodist minister to whom Bill had pledged a $1,000 gift, but the preacher made a grave mistake. He showed up to collect it with a lit cigar in his teeth. Not a great idea when meeting a benefactor who despises tobacco and takes a low view of those who smoke it. Did he get the money? Nary a cent, renowned journalist Addison Bennett recounted for the Oregonian. That cigar cost that congregation a cool $1,000. At one time, he had a written will that lent gifts of $500,000 each for Willamette University and the Methodist Church, but these, as you'll soon learn, were not to be. Even at the height of his wealth and prosperity, Bill was known to spend much of his time on the range with his sheep, sleeping in the open air, on the grass, or a small bed of sheepskin. If a herder quits suddenly and another is not at hand, Bill takes a herd and follows it until he can find another, Bennett wrote. Sometimes two or more quit at once, and Bill has been under such circumstances known to have herded 6,000 or 7,000 sheep for days and weeks. Though the wealth of the potato king of Clackamas County was, well, small potatoes compared to that of his brother, the millionaire horse king, George Henry Brown also cultivated a reputation as a strong advocate and benefactor of local education. In 1927, 30 acres he offered to donate for the construction of the new Canby Union High School was so attractive it led to one of the most lopsided election results in Canby's history. Asked to select between the George Brown tract and the original Oakley Hill location, district voters cast 450 ballots in favor of the former, with only 14 apparently very confused residents opting for the other side. Though the original building was torn down in 1992, George Brown's donated land still serves as the home of the new modern high school. The Bill Brown Empire, as it was commonly known, was not to last. Bill was slow to adjust to the rise of gas-powered automobiles following the end of World War I, and he maintained his large herds and employees even after the market for horses as a means of transportation had all but disappeared. The strange circumstances of George's death in 1930 serve as an eerie echo of the market factors that destroyed Bill's fortune. On the morning of May 26th, George was driving a team of horses near his New Era home when he was accidentally run down by a truck that was trying to pass him.
George was thrown to the pavement where he hit his head and fractured his skull. The automobile's effect on Bill's empire were just as devastating as they had been on his poor brother. And the Great Depression, along with large-scale horse rustling, did away with the little financial reserves he had left. He filed for bankruptcy the year after George's death. In 1935, he was forced to mortgage his property and become a resident of the Methodist Old People's Home in Salem, a charitable institution that he had helped start with a $10,000 gift 25 years earlier. He died in 1941, 85 years old, and completely penniless. But I think he would have been okay with that. Just listen to these words from one of his last interviews. "I have had money, lots of it, and I have been without it. And I have found that money neither makes nor mars a man unless he regards it as an end in itself. I like to put my money where I believe it will accomplish something worthwhile. If a man makes money merely to spend on himself or his own pleasure, it doesn't really bring him permanent satisfaction. The money I have given away will go on doing good things long after I am gone." Old Bill was buried in the Brown family plot at Zion Memorial Cemetery in Canby, along with his parents and most of his brothers and sisters. We have many more colorful stories to tell you from the history of the Canby School District, but it'll have to wait till next time on Canby Then.
The great outdoors. Sometimes you just gotta get away to a place where life is simpler. The air is clean and the nearest ringing phone is about a million miles away. One of the best places that we found is My Cowboy Cabin near Joseph, Oregon, in the heart of the Eagle Cap Wilderness.
Eagle Cap is the largest unspoiled wilderness area in Oregon, with breathtaking views of granite mountains and crystal clear lakes, and more than 500 miles of trails to explore. It's one of the premier hiking, fishing, and hunting destinations in the Pacific Northwest. My Cowboy Cabin is open from Memorial Day weekend through Labor Day weekend, and can be reserved on a weekly or monthly basis, depending on availability. With a cabin that sleeps up to 8 people,
and also a teepee that sleeps 8 or more.
That's right. It's perfect for family vacations, retreats, reunions, and more. Find out more at mycowboycabin.com.
And that's our show. Special thanks to our guest today, Bee Appleseed, and to all of our sponsors who really make it possible to do what we do. We encourage you to check them out and help support the local small businesses who support us. Hey, if you like what you just heard, please let us know. Write a review for us on Facebook, iTunes, or your favorite podcast app. And don't forget to subscribe so you never miss our latest episodes. Don't miss our next episode because we'll be bringing you the sights and sounds. Okay, let's be honest, mostly just the sounds of Hairfest 9 happening this weekend at Pat's Acres. It's the mother of all tribute bands, festivals, and we'll be tracking down interviews with some of the musicians and diehard fans who look forward to the occasion every year. If you have a news tip, an idea for a guest we should invite on the program, or suggestions of how we can improve, please contact us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at CanbyNow. Or to learn how you can start supporting our show and gain access to exclusive content through Patreon, visit canbynowpod.com/plus.